It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome to episode 22 of the official Geek Speak podcast. I'm your host, Sean, and joined as always is my co-host, Josh, the Sun-Kissed Revenger, Rudy Rudolph. That's right, nicknames are back, baby. This is a podcast where we watch movies, make movies, play games, and more. What else can you ask for? What's up?
I'm dying, vibing, thriving, all the ends.
All the ends? All right. The Sun-Kissed Revenger. You get revenge on everyone who steals your sun-kissed cans.
Darn tootin' right.
No one takes your sodas.
No.
All right. And what a week for nerds and media consumers everywhere. We got Thor 4 and Stranger Things this past week. And before we talk about any of that, Rudy, did you watch anything good this week besides those two things you can't mention?
Okay, give me one moment.
Because I actually had some stuff, too. I watched Top Gun Maverick, like I said I was going to do. I finally did it. I watched Elvis, and it's fine.
Yep.
It's 3 hours almost. It's like 2 hours, 40 minutes or something. It's a bit long.
Indeed.
Austin Butler was great in it. I liked Austin Butler. I liked the music. I loved the style overall from Baz Luhrmann.
Yep.
I didn't like Tom Hanks' casting. Or performance.
As you said, he gave out major Jared Leto in House of Gucci vibes, and I 100% agree with that statement.
It's Paolo!
I watched Minions, The Rise of Gru. I actually liked it and had fun. I was not expecting that.
Yeah, last episode, we were recording on July 1st, and you said immediately that we had to stop recording for you to go watch Minions, Rise of Gru with your brother.
Yeah!
So it's pretty funny.
I finished The Boys Season 3, another fantastic season from that show. I watched Adam Sandler's Netflix movie Hustle, another fantastic drama for him. I would highly recommend it, even if you don't watch basketball. Yeah, I think that's about the major stuff that I've seen lately.
Overall, had a good time watching things?
Yes.
Are you keeping up with Ms. Marvel?
I am, and I am loving it.
The final episode is next week, right? Or this week?
Yes, the last episode does come out this week.
I also watched the first Top Gun. It's fine.
It's fine.
Yep. Top Gun Maverick's better.
Maverick is, of course, definitely better. I think the love of the first film just comes from the nostalgia of it.
See, I don't care about the military propaganda in either one, which is all it is. It's just a glorified commercial for the Navy. And also, it has contradicting messages of stay in line and do the right thing, and also be wild and don't follow the rules.
Exactly. That's how you survive. That's how Tom Cruise does life.
I also rewatched and showed my parents The Secret Life of Walter Mitty.
So good.
It's a great movie. I love it. I love it so much.
I remember when that came out, like seeing the trailer, I was just like, what is this? And why do I want to see it so bad? That I saw like the critical reception for it was so mixed. And, you know, fast forward to today, and like everyone that's watched it loves it and is wondering why critics were so mixed on it.
A review basically said, this is just a 2-hour Super Bowl commercial for something. And I kind of agree with that. It's like Trident Gum, unleash your limits. That's kind of the vibe I get a bit. But it's great. It's fun. It's inspiring.
Ben Stiller is a very good director. I've been watching his Apple show, Severance. So fantastic.
He likes Adam Scott a lot, which I understand why.
Yes, Adam Scott is also great in it.
Adam Scott plays a lot of jerks. Yeah.
Yeah.
He's good. The beard is so fascinating to me.
Indeed.
All right, Josh. What a week it was, man.
That's so weird to think that Stranger Things came out a week ago.
Yeah.
Or finished a week ago.
Yeah. Technically, like, 10 days from ago, but, like, still, it's a week ago. If we recorded this promptly, the way it was supposed to be recorded, it would have been a week ago.
Promptly? Who do you think we are?
All right. But this podcast, not only do we talk about pop culture and nerdy stuff, we also, every episode, go through a different Disney Channel original movie, or DCOM for short, and we will see how in a short period of time, the biggest media company on Earth, Disney, caters towards solely children instead of families, but with their DCOMs, with a large sample size, and we'll see any quality changes, etc. That's why we watched the movie Rip Girls. It's the next DCOM on the list, also the year 2000. This is the worst year of DCOMs so far out of the three we've seen.
The only good film that truly good film to come from this year has been, what's the one? I can't think words. Mouth.
Color of Friendship.
Yes, that one. I couldn't think of it.
Yeah, was good.
Yes.
The others have been so far been fine, but that's about it.
They have either been meh or Alley Cat Strike.
That movie's a godsend. What do you mean, Josh?
What do you mean?
Go watch our last episode to hear about Alley Cat Strike and rapper Macklemore.
I was so tired of it, not only when I watched it, but when I recorded it, I said some great stuff.
Yeah, I just edited all that yesterday. That was interesting. That episode's going to go out while the day we're recording this. So that was episode 21. This is episode 22. We're in for some good time. But we also talk about news, geeky, nerdy, pop culture-y news, as well as, at the end, every episode we do a super weird story, which that will be explained when we get there. Ready, Josh?
Why not?
So, we're starting with some sad news.
Oh, why do you do this to me?
So, a tragedy happened a few days ago. We lost legendary actor James Caan. Most viewers of our age group know him as Buddy the Elf's dad from Elf. But he was also the author in Misery, he was Sonny in the Godfather films, and he had an overall massive, massive career, and he was passed away at the age of 82 years old.
He was a great actor. It's going to hurt watching Elf every Christmas from now on. It's just sad.
He really was amazing.
When I rewatched The Godfather, I'm just like, how did they get him to do Elf? I still want to know how that conversation went down.
I still not watched The Godfather.
Well, watch it and be happy that he gave a great performance.
Okay. On other news, some movies came out. We got, like I said, this past week we got Thor 4, but we also got Mr. Malcolm's List and The Forgiven.
I did not hear about Mr. Malcolm's List until I went to work and saw that we had it. And yet we've gotten people to see it. If I haven't heard of it, how have they heard of it?
If they're like 60, it's something that they might want to see. So
I would still like to know how they have heard of this. I hear about every movie. I've not heard of that movie.
Some people just look at what's in theaters that day and then just be like, oh, let's go see it.
Okay.
That being said, the AMC in my town does not have it. We have like 5 movies right now. It's a pretty small theater. But it's mostly Thor 4 right now.
The four.
It's Thorfinn Thunder. The Forgiven. Have you heard of it beforehand?
I just looked it up. No, I have not.
Okay, it came out. It looks fine. Yep. It's got Ralph Fiennes in it. And also another person, Jessica Chastain. Everything must be faced. That's the tagline. I don't think everything must be faced.
That tells me nothing of the movie.
Correct. It's suspenseful.
Ooh.
Is it playing anywhere? Is it playing at your theater?
Nope.
Well, it came out on July 1st, so anyway. Cool. And soon we get some great movies. On the 22nd, we get the movie Nope, I'm super hyped for.
Yes.
I actually went to the library, a physical library, and checked something out, Josh.
Weird.
I checked out the DVD Nope. Not Nope. Nope.
I was just like, oh, so they've already bootlegged it.
I've time traveled, Josh. I checked out the DVD Get Out to show my dad.
Crazy.
And also,
you own it.
What?
I gave you a copy of it.
Oh, you're right. Well, I wasn't in there to get it. I was in there to ask a question about something, and then I just saw it on the shelf. But that's really funny. I also checked out the movie Drive, so at least it wasn't, like, for nothing.
I still need to see Drive.
Me too. Come over and watch it with me.
You live many hours away.
That's why it's fun. We got Namor picks, Josh, from Black Panther Wakanda Forever.
We did.
I'm surprised
we did a good trailer during Thor.
He has the little wings on his feet still. I'm so happy. Do you want to know why I'm happy about that, Josh?
Why?
Namor is like Aquaman, the fact that he's half Atlantean and half human. But his human half actually gave him the X gene. And his one mutant power is little wings on his feet.
That, man, the X-Men, just, you can either have the greatest powers known to man, or you can have winged feet.
He can fly.
How do the little wings on his feet make him fly?
That's like, it's like Hermes, Josh.
Yeah, but at least those are shoes. He can take them off.
No, these are attached to his ankles and he floats around.
Well,
my question is, since he's in the water, does he have to dry off his feathers first on his feet?
These are the questions that writers of comic books don't want to answer.
They don't want to answer it?
Correct.
Oh, crazy. We also got pictures of a few more people from Black Panther 2, but Namor was the biggest, like, cool thing to happen out of that. Going to be played by Tenoch Huerta, and this version of Namor will be inspired by different Latin cultures like the Aztecs and the Mayans. I think that's really cool, because they didn't want to just have Aquaman again, the movie.
Yeah, his from the design concepts that I guess have leaked or were released, however it was, you could definitely see that, and like it's gonna be hard for people to compare him to Aquaman, aside from, you know, the water.
Aside from the whole Atlantis superhero thing, half Atlantean, half human.
Yeah.
He still has a lot of basis in some of the things to Aquaman, but like it's not gonna be that similar. Also, he is genuinely an actual anti-hero. And
what? You mean Sony's anti-heroes aren't actually anti-heroes?
Kraven the Animal Lover? No.
Morbius the living vampire who doesn't like to be a vampire?
He sucks on red bags, that's it.
No, he sucks on blue bags. We gotta be clear on that.
Also,
it's Smurf blood.
Because we're experts, apparently, on all this stuff. But Morbius, also at the end, he doesn't need the blood anymore. He just starts flying away and fine. What happened there? Anyway, what a movie Morbius was. But Namor.
I think Morbius is the first movie I've seen that forgot how to movie.
Oh, boy. Namor. Let's address this part more. The version of Atlantis is going to be a sunken Mayan or Aztec city. And that's really cool to me.
Cool.
I love that idea. People are like, they're ruining it. Someone actually commented on my video about him saying that they ruined his character. Because, first off, the movie's not out yet. Second off, because they changed his backstory. No, they just added more backstory. That's literally it.
I am excited. I know little to nothing about Namor other than the base idea that he's Marvel's Aquaman. That's all I've ever known.
Do you know that?
And I'm excited to see what it's going to be like.
Did you know that he predates Aquaman?
I did not. Or
yes,
did I? I don't remember.
He was the first mutant in comic books.
I do remember that fact.
Yeah, he also, this is a really cool thing, Namor is someone who constantly woos Sue Storm and kind of makes her cheat on Reed a bit sometimes.
I think I remember I think I remember when I read the Civil War novelization, I think I remember Sue going to Namor for help or something and like talking about like, ooh, we were lovers once or something like
they
that.
They have an on-again, off-again fling through his seduction because he never wears clothes. He wears little green undies.
I mean, you're not wrong.
He does have outfits in the comics, but the green undies are what's iconic. And they're keeping them, but like the brief, like boxer briefs kind of looking thing. It's really fun. Also, if I had that body, why not show it off? I mean, he looks like a god. Namor picks, yay or nay?
I give yay.
Yay! Avatar 2 news.
Oh, goody.
Actually, three pieces of Avatar 2 news this week.
Okay, is it news or is it Cameron ranting?
We have numerous things. The first thing is James Cameron slams people because he tells off Avatar haters by defending his 3-hour runtime, saying Avatar 2 is 3 hours, but you binge at least 10-hour shows sitting like in one sitting in 8 hours. He says just go get up and pee. And I don't think he understands that it's not the same thing when we have a pause button.
Not only do we have a pause button, but most people will be on their phones at least, like, at the very least, like, a quarter of the time they're watching. So, like, they're half paying attention the whole time. But in a theater, you're supposed to be paying attention the whole time and not have your phone out.
I don't mind that. That's not. I think the biggest thing is just having to get up, go pee, get snacks. If someone needs to talk to you, you can talk to them. As binging a show is not the same thing as staying in a movie theater at all. And he should know this.
Every time he opens his mouth lately, he just gives off major boomer vibes.
Yeah, like targeting Wonder Woman, the movie, 2017.
I forgot that!
He's not the best dude. But this movie looks pretty, at least.
The ego he has, and I like his films, like he's a very good director. He knows what he's doing. He's only made like 6 films, though, in his entire career. But they are major films.
For directing, at least. He's produced and worked on writing and stuff for a lot more.
Yes, but still, he makes it seem like that he's the god of cinema, knows what he's doing. He's also the man that filmed most of Avatar 2 actually underwater and made his cast learn how to breathe for, you know, 5 minutes underwater or however long it was. And then, meanwhile, while he's doing that, Aquaman is filming on green screens and stuff and looks very good.
We also got our first look at Sigourney Weaver as Jake and Neytiri's teenage Na'vi daughter. Do you have questions? I have questions.
From my recollection of the first film, they tried to do the body consciousness transfer thing to her when she died.
Right.
And didn't work. But then it worked for Jake. So then my question is this still Sigourney's character from the first movie, or was she somehow reborn and doesn't know who she is? Either way, this was a very weird choice.
I think maybe the consciousness went into that big life tree, and then she was reborn into the next child.
So the hair fucking led to Sigourney being born again?
Yeah.
What a phrase.
You said it. Also,
I said it. Cameron's the one that thought it and wrote it and directed it.
Here's the third piece.
Oh, goody.
Of the Avatar 2 The Way of Water news. And it's from both the trailer as well as now we have more set pictures that Stephen Lang is back also as a Na'vi. Which is confusing.
So we're letting the racist colonialist become one of the natives.
So I also have an explanation on Sigourney and on Stephen Lang now, from this article. In this movie now.
Was your hunch of the life tree?
No. The colonel will be coming back as something called a recombinant, or recom. This is apparently a new technology that can embed the memories of dead human soldiers into Avatar Na'vi bodies. This is horrendous.
That makes sort of sense for him. That makes no sense for Sigourney.
This is also just horrendous that you're putting the military is forcing themselves into bodies of the people they hate.
That was the idea of the first one, being like, yo, this is bad. Let's not do this. This is shame. And now it's just like, actually, let's go full with it. Why not? It seems like fun.
Nay.
Yeah, I'm going to give a nay also.
All of this is kind of nay, and also they're profiting off of, like, Pacific Islander culture while hiring white people to play these parts. So that's also pretty messed up. Oof. Rise of Gru, Josh, has passed $200 million and is now the highest box office ever over Independence Day of all time.
The amount of teenagers I have seen come not only in suits, but just come in droves is insane.
Are teenagers in suits banned at your theater for this movie?
Not yet. No, there's a reason. They were vandalizing the theaters. They were like setting off fireworks and stuff inside the theaters. Like, there's a reason they were being banned.
Oof.
But thankfully, not in my theater yet.
I'm giving this a yay. Making Minions the highest Independence Day of all time, a movie? Hilarious.
I'm giving this a yay because Sony is losing their minds trying to figure out why Morbius didn't do what Minions is doing.
So a yay for all the wrong reasons.
Indeed.
Awesome. Disney Plus changed Jessica Jones' title screen to AKA Jessica Jones, the original title for the Netflix show.
I'm just more curious as to why. Because, like, when you look up the show on Disney Plus, it's still just Jessica Jones. It's only changed in the title card.
That's fine.
I was more curious.
Yeah. I'm going to give this a nay for no reason other than to bandwagon the hatred online. I don't care.
I will give it a nay because it's just AKA Jessica Jones, but her superhero name isn't in the title. So if you want the title to make sense, put her superhero name, then Jewel? AKA, then Jessica Jones. Be consistent.
You want to say Jewel now?
Yes, please add Jewel, AKA Jessica Jones. I want that to be the new title
so
of the show.
Stupid.
Indeed, but they're the ones that add the AKA.
Yeah, you gotta have something beforehand, you know.
Exactly.
We also got, I don't know if you've seen them, like five new posters for DC, six new posters for DC Super Pets.
And I think I've seen some of them.
I can send you the link for all of them right now if you want me to. And it reveals Lex Luthor casting, it reveals Lois Lane casting. We have Olivia Wilde now as Lois Lane, officially.
Hi.
And her tagline is Life in the Fast Lane. They'll have like teaser, like little words on them. Like the Bruce is loose. Tall, Clark, and handsome. Life in the Fast Lane. Bring a towel for Aquaman.
Oh my God!
And played by Jermaine Clement.
I love that and hate it at the same time.
Isn't that amazing?
That is such a wild casting.
Also, we have Black Aquaman now. I love that.
John Early.
The tagline on the Flash poster is just "Keep up." And you scroll down. Mark Maron is playing Lex, and the tagline on that poster is "Smooth Criminal." Who's Wonderful. John Early?
I'm looking it up.
Name's familiar. Oh, he's not done as much as we would think he's done. All right, I like that. I love that actually. The disaster artist. He was Chris.
That means nothing.
Okay.
I've seen him in stuff. His face is very familiar.
So he's a voice actor mostly.
Oh my God, David Diggs is Cyborg.
Are you serious?
And Jamila Jamil is Wonder Woman.
I knew that part. Do you like these posters?
I mean, they're character posters. Like, they're fine. I've got nothing against them.
I love these taglines. Bring a towel. He's gonna get you wet.
I'm still curious if the Dwayne Johnson and Kevin Hart casting is a contractual obligation for them. Like, every so often they have to star in a movie together, whether that be a cameo or just full-on being co-stars. I still give this a yay because Keanu Reeves is Batman.
Moving on, Josh. Star Wars, Taika Waititi, Natalie Portman. So, Taika Waititi was apparently on set of Thor: Love and Thunder and was asked by Natalie, what are you going to do next? And he replied saying, I'm hoping to do a Star Wars thing. And then I'm going to use the exact quote of what he said. Taika said, I'm trying to work on a Star Wars thing. Have you ever wanted to be in a Star Wars movie? To Natalie Portman. She said, I've been in Star Wars movies. And he replied, I forgot about those ones. I don't even know how to respond to this.
That is just hilarious.
I can so see that happening on set for something. Making conversation and saying, oh, you want to do Star Wars? And then not realizing, oh, wait a minute, you've done that before.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
I'm willing to bet the two of them had a great laugh about it. That's just very funny to me.
I don't think it's a big deal. I think it's hilarious. I definitely think he should watch all the movies again before making his own movie.
I'm willing to bet he is.
I don't know. He decided to, when he played Blackbeard, look at the Wikipedia page, saw he was from Bristol, and said, "That's too hard of an accent. I'm not going to do it."
I mean, it's also, you know, fiction.
Sure. I'm giving this a yay. This is hilarious.
It's very funny. I give it a yay.
Steven Yeun, Josh.
An actor.
Guess what?
What?
He's going to be in the next Bong Joon-ho film.
Yay.
Alongside Robert Pattinson.
I'm fine with this.
You're not mad at this?
I am not.
For those of you who do not know, Bong Joon-ho is director of Parasite and The Host, and some pretty amazing, like, Korean horror films, and others, like, great cinema, so I'm fine.
Go watch Snowpiercer also. Fantastic film.
Oh yeah, he did do that. I am excited to watch whatever he does next. I loved Parasite. I love The Host. I had not watched Snowpiercer yet. It's on my list. It's a very long list. We keep adding more movies to our watch list as well, because more things keep coming out.
That is how it works.
It's a frustrating time. Yay on Bong Joon-ho. Steven Yeun coming. I love Steven Yeun. He's great. He played Avatar Wan in Legend of Korra. If you don't know who he is, he also was in The Walking Dead as Glenn. That's a pretty famous thing he's known for. He was in Fast and the Furious as a character.
But most recently, he was nominated for an Oscar in the leading role for a film called Minari. I started it, and I haven't finished it yet, but he is fantastic. And also, Invincible. He is the lead in that as well.
He also was in Okja. Okja? The Netflix film?
Okja. And yes, that's another Bong Joon-ho film.
Yeah, so I'm glad he's working with him again. Yay! Jessica Always Jones wonders. Thing. Again.
Jessica Jones?
And Charlie Cox and Vincent D'Onofrio. So those two were already confirmed to be coming back for Echo a while ago. It's now back in the news again, saying they're coming back, but also this time, like, it's like official, they've been, said they've signed off the papers and stuff, whatever. But in Echo, the rumor is now that Charlie Cox's character of Daredevil is going to be looking for, needing an ally. And he will go and find Miss Jewel herself, Jessica Jones. And Kristen Ritter has been very coy about this right now, because she can't say anything.
Yeah.
I'm giving this a nay solely for one reason. The show's called Echo.
Yeah, I give it a nay also, but also mainly because I didn't care for Echo in Hawkeye. I think that she can be a good character, but not letting her be her own character in her own show seems a bit odd.
Right. This is the chance to do it. If you didn't like her in Hawkeye, give her this chance. Don't make people watch for Daredevil and Kingpin and Jessica Jones.
Okay, I can understand the Kingpin one. That I can
That's
understand.
That's fine.
And maybe Daredevil shows up like at the end of the show to help her out. If that's what it is, then that's fine. But if he's like a more prominent character in the show, that has me a little bit worried.
If the finale is them having a team to fight Kingpin together, those three.
If they team up to fight him, I'm fine with that.
Sure.
But overall, I'm giving it a petty nay because the show is not called Jessica Jones and Daredevil and Kingpin. Just give us Echo. That's all. That's what I want, a deaf character like that to be in the limelight.
I give it nay because it's not called Defenders 2.0.
Come on, Josh. They're replacing Iron Fist with Echo now in the Defenders.
Look, as long as Echo doesn't say anything about being the Defender of Kunlun 50 million times, I'm fine with that.
So, we got new images from Lord of the Rings, The Rings of Power. We got the first one, woman looking up. The second one, they're looking up at birds. The third one, sky. The fourth one, elvish trees.
This looks very pretty.
It's very pretty. I don't have a lot to add to it, but it's pretty. And that fourth image does feel like it's in Rivendell in the Lord of the Rings original films.
I'm very excited to see the war of streaming services and their mega fantasy shows. Netflix has The Witcher. HBO is bringing back Game of Thrones with House of the Dragon. Amazon has Rings of Power. Who's next?
Speaking of the show, did you see the new teaser?
Not yet.
I'm making you watch it right now, Josh. It's a minute long.
Well, fine then. I'll happily watch it just to spite you.
That's a good... Okay. Characters? Oh, look, there's a tree. That's a man. Oh, paper.
This is such thrilling commentary.
The skies are strange. The music's pretty loud. We got birds again. It's the same shots. So the pictures are just from this. Yeah.
Okay. I'm curious if Peter Jackson was a consultant on this at all.
It's very pretty. The teaser looks like Middle Earth. Oh, that comet's moving.
What the comet is, Gandalf?
It's the Rings of Power. The comet's Gandalf? I mean, Gandalf is an Eloian, or Lorin, which is like an ancient deity, so maybe. He's over 2,000 years old.
July 14th, new teaser.
So we got the full trailer in 4 days. So that'll be on the next episode. We have more Lord of the Rings talk next episode, Josh.
Yay. Watch them cast Michael Fassbender to be a young Gandalf in the show.
I'd love that. That'd be hilarious. Even though Gandalf would look the same, or should look the same.
It's fine.
The final piece of news, Josh, is Captain America 4 finds its director, a.k.a. Sam Wilson's film as Captain America. Because Sam Wilson, Anthony Mackie, is Captain America. Get it through your heads, Internet. Even Chris Evans had a comment on that, and people are still arguing with him about it.
People are frustrating, but I am excited.
The filmmaker is known mostly for helming the 2018 Cloverfield Paradox film. And I've not seen any of the Cloverfield films yet, and I know that this one is a bit more mixed than some of them.
The reason I think that film didn't work was
it had an editing issue. It had they shoehorned in the Cloverfield idea instead to it. I know that.
Yeah, I think the problem was that it started out as more of an alien type film that became a Cloverfield film, and the director probably wasn't the most comfortable with that happening, but you know, had to work with it.
Right.
But his next film, Loose, is fantastic. That is a very, very good film. I would highly recommend watching that. So I'm excited to see what he can bring to Captain America.
He is a Nigerian American filmmaker named Julius Ona, and I am excited to see what he does with this character. I like Sam. I like Cap. I like Cap's new suit. He's got some fun wings on it and a shield. I dig it. Yay.
Yee.
Thor Love and Thunder came out. And
it did.
Josh and I will disagree on every single part of it. And I know that. And he knows that. And that's okay. We have just equally valid but different takes. And that's fine. We can have different opinions. And I will call him a doo-doo head for it. But it's okay. You're a doo-doo head, Josh.
You're a doo-doo head.
You know, you're right. So Thor Love and Thunder, you're giving a yay or nay. Go ahead.
I give yay. I like.
I give nay. I think it's fine.
Doo-doo head.
Doo-doo head. Anyway. Also, see how this is how friendships can work? You don't have to, like, you know, avidly bash your people who love or hate something you don't enjoy or do enjoy as much. It's okay. Wow. The internet makes everything so divisive, Josh.
Crazy.
It is bombastic, in a word.
It is 100% a Taika Thor film.
Yes, and therefore, if you're not on board with that, you won't love it. But if you are on board with that, you will love it. And that's the difference between us two in this.
I am someone that very much vibes with Taika's films, both in comedically and just as films in general. I think probably my favorite film of his is Jojo Rabbit. That is a very, very good film. Then I'd probably go Hunt for the Wilder People, then Ragnarok, then this, then What We Do in the Shadows. All of them are great films, in my opinion. There's not a bad film I've seen of his And I think there's, like, one more film in his filmography I haven't seen yet. I don't remember what it is, though.
This is my fourth Taika film I've seen. I've seen Hunt for the Wilder People, I have seen What We Do in the Shadows, and I've seen his two Thor films. I've not seen Jojo Rabbit yet. I plan to.
Highly recommend.
I loved Hunt for the People. I loved What We Do in the Shadows. I just don't enjoy his superhero stuff as much. I will say I loved the Mighty Thor in this so much. Mighty Thor is when Jane Foster is Thor. It's in every trailer. It's in every poster. Move on. She is Thor. She's great. Fantastic. Loved it. You like gore?
Yay!
You like gore?
Me too. I gore, my man. My only complaint with gore is that he wasn't in it enough. But when he was in it, my God, I loved his aesthetic. I loved the vibes. Bale's performance was fantastic. It was great. The stuff in the Shadow Realm when it's black and white, I thought was so cool.
Yeah, I loved what they did with the color there. I loved gore in general. I loved Christian Bale's performance. Like you said, I thought his first act entrance was a bit rushed, the way it happened. Personally, because the movie's less than 2 hours long, and that's fine. I think there had some overall pacing issues in it. First act seemed rushed, but some of the other stuff seemed a bit muddled, and that's okay, I guess. But I think having more time with Gore at the beginning, and that is in his tragedy, would have been nice to have, personally.
I think that, for me personally, I think it was enough to understand, especially when he confronts the gods. I think that was done very well and gets really straight to the point, because it's a lot of big concepts with his character and why he does what he does, and I think that it was done well in the short time frame that it was given.
And we've talked about it before in this podcast. I explained who Gore is in the past in the show, as well.
It is quite a lot.
Well, yeah, I also explained in the show who Gore is, but more specifically, they got him right.
Yes.
We didn't get a god bomb, which I wanted. Because honestly, if anyone was going to do a god bomb, it'd be Taika Waititi.
Yeah.
But I think that Gore was done really well overall. I didn't love there's a switch. He goes from, you didn't help me, to, I will kill all of the gods. And the switch didn't feel natural because the Necro Sword just kind of went to him and instantly made him say the vow. So, a little abrupt, but I think there's a few extra lines in between those moments would have been fine to me. I think that there's a few polishing up moments here and there in this film that would have worked better. I don't think there's an actual genuinely bad Marvel film, and Josh disagrees with me on that probably, but I don't dislike this film. I just think it's fine. Let's see another good thing. Here we go. I really liked that there was gay. Yeah. There was gay. There are gay rock men. I loved that. This small, subtle line from Astrid, my name's Axel, was great.
Yeah.
There's an Asgardian in this movie, that line implying that they're trans, and I loved it. It was great. I love that Taika's trying to give representation to people and not make it like the absolute core focus, because that would... They don't want their identity is not solely sexuality. They're a lot more than that, as everyone is. And I love that. I do not love the fact that he promised the audience for literal years that Valkyrie's entire journey in this movie would be about finding her queen, and that's not what we got from her at all.
Yeah, it does seem a bit odd.
Like, that was literally word for word from both Tessa and from him saying that this is about finding that she's on the hunt for her queen. And that's, I would have loved to see that for her journey, this character. But I also know a lot was cut out of this film, a lot was changed in this film. The first pitch of this film was not what it ended up being. And that's fine, it just means that they could have done a bit more damage control and saying, hey, it's not quite that level of super gay, as has originally been said, but still, he put as much as he could into the film.
Okay, that could explain why Lena Headey from Game of Thrones, why she was cut. Maybe she was Tessa's love interest in this.
Oh, okay.
That's at least my guess. I have nothing going off on that. But you saying that stuff was cut, maybe that's also why, because she did film stuff for it. I don't know to the extent of how much she was in it, but she was in it.
Yeah, he had like potentially like 4 hours of movie.
Very curious.
Maybe a few extra of those moments could have helped, though, still, you know? To me, it's messy. I didn't laugh at almost any other jokes, like even once. The screaming goats grew on me so much, though. I do not know what happens. There are two screaming goats in this movie that scream every single time they're on screen, and it made me die laughing.
At first, I was just like, is this going to work? I don't know if this is going to work. And throughout the film, I was just like, this is working. How and why is this working?
And it reminded me of in How I Met Your Mother. There's a song in the car. They play 500 Miles all the time in a car ride. And they say, just wait. He'll grow on you. And it does. The screaming grew on me. And I don't know how, I don't know why, but me and my dad were sitting next to her and had the exact same thought about that.
One of my favorite things was the Mighty Thor storyline. I'm very happy that they actually stuck with the comics in a lot of aspects of it.
Yes, I brought that up before in the past as well, saying I know what her journey is. I really want them to do it. And I was worried that they would not give her the arc from the comics that I wanted her to have. And they did. And it was not joked about even 1 second.
It was done very well. And I also really liked how it fit into Thor's journey, at least inward self, relating to that. I don't want to get like too into that for obvious spoiler reasons, but I think that the way it concluded was done very well, in my opinion.
Oh, also, if you want to avoid spoilers, there are timestamps down below in the description of every single episode you can see to go jump ahead to whatever part you want to listen to. So if you want to go after this, if you want to skip the spoilers and go to the next part, you can do that. Or skip the superhero story at the end, you can do that. Cool. Now back to this part. Yes, I agree. I really enjoyed most of Jane's stuff in general, this movie. I have some problems with some stuff in it, but I can say that for spoilers, because I can't talk about some things. Like, I had some problems with how the hammer was back in her hand. But I can't say what my specifics are until we're in spoilers.
I guess kind of like my general thoughts, I thought that this was a lot of fun. I loved, again, like the first film, great action. I don't think the action wasn't as good as the first one, but still very well done, especially with the different styles.
By first one, are you saying Ragnarok?
Yes.
Okay.
The first Taika one. Ragnarok, I think, had like a little bit better action, but it's still done very well here. I think that it was a lot of fun. To me, the humor clicked with me, but I just click with Taika's humor in everything that he's done. I loved so much of this. I just had a fantastic time with it.
Do you know this movie was almost a mockumentary?
Well, I mean, the Dale from those two Thor shorts from Civil War, he makes an appearance. Daryl, that's what it is. I was so happy when he showed up.
It doesn't mean what the shorts were canon. It just means that he is canon, and I love that.
It's great.
Also, Matt Damon returns as the same character from Ragnarok.
I'm so happy he returned.
Okay, spoilers. Warning, go down below. You can skip ahead to the Stranger Things section or the Superhero Story section if you do not want to hear any of this. Okay, cool. Hercules, played by Roy Kent from Ted Lasso.
I wanted to shout out Roy Kent.
Roy Kent. Oh, boy.
That is such a great casting.
What's really funny to me is I had it in our last news section that he was rumored to be in it for last episode, and I cut it out. Because I'm like...
Thank you. I'm happy I went in blind.
Because if I brought it up, that rumor, I'm like, you know what? Josh, the viewers could skip things. Josh can't skip being told things. I was happy with that. And he looks, facially and voice-wise at least, like comic book Herc. Although it should be Heracles, because Greek It's Heracles. The Romans was Hercules. You're about to hear a lot of nitpicks from me, Josh.
Oh, I'm fully expecting that.
Okay, I don't love this movie. I don't hate this movie. I think it's fine. I don't think it's good. I think it was fun, and there is a difference to me. I think most of it was lazily written, and most of it was nonsense. I do not like that the wishing thing at the end undid, and that Thor knew where it was, and that kind of undoes a bit of the Infinity Saga stuff to me. Because if that existed, you could, all of Endgame, be like, hey guys, I know a thing. We can investigate this. There are...
Well, to be fair, with getting into the center of the universe, to actually access that stuff, he needed the axe. He didn't know that's what he would have needed to get into there, but Gore was the one that figured it out. That's what he needed to access it.
Yeah.
So even if he knew about it, he wouldn't have been able to get in there.
It was just a little odd.
Also, he was in super depresso mode for 5+ years.
Another hard thing to get to, let's make a wish. Wasn't a fan of that plot point in general. Also,
I thought that how it was going to go was that something would have happened to Gore. He would have died or something like that. Then Thor would have wished to save Jane's life. If that had happened, I would have been like, okay, it's not cliche, but that to me kind of would have felt cheating.
I think that it should have been Jane being Thor going forward and not Odin's son, personally. I prefer her as Thor at this point. I also think that Jane's Foster's character was a not the best message to cancer fighters right now. Because even with all that power, you still lose that fight. I didn't like that. Because in the comics, that's not at all how it goes. Yes,
well, she was also in stage 4, and when you hit stage 4, that is a very, very difficult thing to survive, essentially.
Yes, but it was written that way in the movie. I'm saying that's a writing thing you couldn't change. Wish that the cancer scenario went differently. I'm glad they brought in the cancer because it was important so that even with that, you're still worthy. I also wish that Jane was just worthy. That's it. That's all it was. And not that it was a love spell on the hammer protecting her. I wish that she was just defaultly worthy on her own without Thor saying, I want you to protect her to the hammer.
Oh, I took that more as kind of like a joking kind of thing. I didn't take that as like... That's what it was.
Oh,
I took that as she was worthy, and that it was just a joking thing. Like, hammer, make sure you protect her. Like, it was propped up on the couch and stuff like that.
Yeah, but then it glowed magic when he said that, and Cork said that was so powerful it was like magic, and it made a new enchantment on it.
I completely missed that when I rewatched it. I had to keep my eyes.
Yeah,
open.
The most powerful magic of all, love, whatever, made it do its thing. I wasn't a fan of that. I also do not like it all. That the hammer just came back together. I really wish that she reassembled it.
I mean, how would she have reassembled it?
I doesn't matter to me. I think it feels more lazy to me than just... She gets near it, storm clouds happen, and now magic brings it together. Because that didn't happen for Odin's son in Ragnarok when it was broken.
For me, personally, it doesn't bother me that much. And I love the kind of power up of it, of like how she could send it off into individual pieces.
That was dope. I do like that.
Back together.
I like that a lot. I like most of what she did. The catchphrase thing, a little grating. Didn't love that idea, but I thought the end had a fun little payoff. That was fine. Here's a fun fact. The shadow monsters were created by kids. Taika said in the script he was writing about shadow demons, and his child asked him, what does a shadow demon look like? He said, I'm not sure yet. And so she drew one and said, like this? And they made that into a scary monster. It was like a snake with spiders on it and stuff.
Fun.
And then all the kids started drawing. Kids created what the demons look like.
That's fun. I did love at the end when Thor gave all the kids temporary Thor powers to fight off the shadow demons. I thought that was fun.
Ah, disagree.
I thought that it was fun. Like, you know, you're going to have all the kids there. It's like, well, he's either got two options. He's either got to protect them as long as he can, or he's got to go bother with Gore, which he can't obviously do. He's protecting them. So giving them temporary powers. Why not? Let's have fun with it. Let the kids be fun for once and not just be, oh, save me.
Child hostages. Now you're child soldiers. I don't know. It gave a weird vibe to me, and I felt like really cheesy. It gave me like We Can Be Heroes vibes. I didn't like that.
I thought that it was fun.
I know, and that's I genuinely love that you loved it. I'm not trying to sound like condescending. I really am happy how much you loved this movie. I love seeing love for movies like this, and it just isn't for me. And that's just how I felt about it overall. I don't want to spend a whole time nitpicking something. I'm like, if I know it's not for me, who cares, you know?
Yeah, I think for me, part of the reason why I love this and Ragnarok, and just everything Taika does in general, is that it's not like a flowing freak hair kind of thing. Like, there's a lot of heart and a lot of intelligence that goes behind what he does, but he also can balance, like, seriousness and comedy very well, depending on what the film is, especially with just the world being on fire for as long as it has been lately. I really needed some good escapist entertainment that was just fun from beginning to end, delivered on the funness of the whole thing, and I got that in strides here.
I'm glad. What were your thoughts on seeing Zeus in a little skirt prancing around?
I loved it. I loved it so much. It's always so fascinating to me going from reading like Percy Jackson, like, you know, he's like this big mighty hero, or just like anything else where it's like that, then like actually researching what Zeus is like, and he's just the worst, and seeing that here, that he's just a horny guy that just wants to have sex and just is the worst, played by Russell Crowe, was just a delight.
Yeah, I am mixed on that scene, because I really, really appreciate Taika making fun of gods.
It's so fun. I loved it.
And kind of like a condemning of like religion is stupid. Not in like in a mean way, but poking fun of this is all a little silly. Because Taika's a Jewish man, and he's religious, and he's like, this is all a little silly, guys. Calm down. And because he's like, Gore's kind of right. If we keep praying and nothing happens, we'd make our own change. That's part of the thing. And I like that. I like that the commentary in that. I wish to dove a little more into that, but I think it was a visual aspect of that, of having Zeus prance around and be an idiot, kind of shows off a bit. We got to see Chris Hemsworth's ass.
So anyone that's been dying to see that, you're welcome.
My mom wants to watch the movie now. Yeah, the throne room scene was very silly, very garish, but I liked the poking fun of the gods, and I think that's really funny.
Mm-hmm. I think if there is any complaint aside from myself, aside from Gore isn't in the film as much as I would have liked him to be, exploring Thor's, I guess, psyche in this, because like they do reference it a lot and they do talk about it, that he's still struggling internally with a lot of stuff. It wasn't as explored as much as I wish that it was, because they do point it out a lot in this. And while it's there in the story, I feel like it could have been a more centered focus even more, especially with Jane's story of, like, you know, how she is dying, and then he, like, learns about that. They could have leaned into it a lot more and had an even bigger tone shift on the second half. Didn't happen, and I wish that it did, but it doesn't knock the film down super much for me. But that is a complaint I've seen, and I do understand, and I do agree with it.
It would be nice to see him butcher some more gods.
Always. Yeah, I would really like to see how he killed the big giant one.
Yeah, all we saw Gore really do is take some kids.
Yeah.
So that's not, he didn't really do a lot.
Well, I mean, I guess the idea was, at least behind the mystery of, like, this small puny guy with a sword was able to take down that giant thing, that, like, the intimidation of that.
Fair. Here's another thing that if you watched in Endgame, if you watched that with this giant thing happening of him leaving with the Guardians and Avengers, expecting to see the Guardians of this movie, you will be disappointed. They are in it for about 5 minutes.
I was not expecting them to be in the movie that much. But when they were there, I thought that the scene with them was fun.
I just don't love the idea of the MCU setting things up and then writing it off, which happens quite a bit now, it feels like. When we have Doctor Strange with Mordo at the end, and then it's like, actually, he's been fighting us for a while, but we're not going to see that. Not amazing.
Well, I mean, that's just part of the filmmaking process, especially for the MCU, because, like Feige has said, like, we plant these seeds and we don't know what exactly we're going to do with it or if we're going to follow through on it. It's more just kind of like they're figuring out as they go. While it's planned out to a certain extent, not every single minute detail is planned out in that kind of sense.
I'm aware.
So, like, him going with the Guardians, like, I was never expecting it to be an entire movie of him teaming up with the Guardians.
I wasn't either.
As long as there was payoff to it, that's all that matters.
I wanted it to have an impact, though, and that didn't really have an impact on him.
I mean, maybe there'll have a more of an impact in Guardians 3.
Right, that's my thought, is that he'll have more time with them in Guardians 3. Because maybe we'll see those missions and stuff that we didn't get to see from this in Guardians 3. Maybe this took place after that point.
I mean, it could lead into, like, Adam Warlock, especially because, like, Gore the God Butcher and, like, Adam Warlock is basically a god, sort of, in a sense. So, like, it could involve that.
True. We'll find out. Do you like the ending with him and the Love and Thunder girl?
I thought that was... I think that it sets up an interesting path for him to go on in the next film. Obviously, we'll
do
have
you want
to see,
next film?
I would be fine seeing the continued adventures, especially like with Hercules. A Thor 5. But seeing like a superhero be a dad, especially in this kind of sense, we haven't really seen, again, this is being off the top of my head, just thinking. So I think adding that, I think would be interesting. But who knows, maybe Taika won't make the next one because he'll be busy with Star Wars.
Josh, we saw the dad-dad relationship in Kick-Ass. What do you mean? With Nicolas Cage.
That's a very different film.
Yes, but the relationship was still there, Josh.
Look, I've been seeing a lot of father-son relationship in The Boys. I wouldn't exactly call that a great role model.
What do you mean? Yeah, I generally agree that it was cute at the end. I didn't love the vibes of it, but that's fine. I think it should be the end of Odin's son's his MCU time, pretty much, though, personally.
I think my kind of thoughts on the MCU just still going, I think is, I'm glad that it's gone from building up to this giant thing to now just being focusing on the solo adventures. And if you want to skip out one, you can skip out one and you're not going to miss anything major in the universe, essentially. Obviously, that's not entirely true. Like WandaVision and Multiverse of Madness, you kind of need to see WandaVision for it to make more sense. But I'm very curious to see where it's going forward, just on the individual side of it all.
Yeah, but are you okay if Odinson does not come back anymore?
I think that if he doesn't come back, I just want, if like the fifth film would be the last one, then I would want it to be an actual conclusion.
Fair enough.
To at least his story. And of course, with the ending with Jane, the second end credit scene, we don't know exactly how Valhalla works. We don't know if she can somehow come back from that. We don't know.
It would be cool if she somehow kept fighting and got out of there.
I think it'd be neat.
But more of an out, and if the next movie is about, is this called The Mighty Thor? That'd be cool.
I'd be very excited for that. And, like, already this film is doing extremely well. So, like, another film would not be out of the realm of possibility.
Would you be okay with another director coming in and doing it?
I'm always down for seeing what a new director can bring to an established character. Like, if John Watts doesn't return to make more Spider-Man movies, I'm fine with that. As long as someone has a good, clear vision, then I'm very curious to see what they can do with
it. Any other final thoughts on Love and Thunder before we move on? Oh, yes! Yeah, hold on. Gay rock men. So, two men, if they are in love, walk into a volcano together, sit in the lava for a long time while holding hands, and a baby will be born.
Literally, they just hold their hands over lava for like a month, and then the baby's born.
And it makes a little bit of sense with how rocks work. Like it.
I love his partner at the end had like a rock mustache.
Uh huh. Heimdall's son seems to be a trans boy. I love that.
Cool.
I was fine with that. That's great. This is I want to have more of this be more commonplace in the MCU going forward.
Yeah.
Oh, rock men. Taika keeps playing gay characters.
Yeah.
Anyway, I don't know. I'm just an observation.
Just an observation.
Yeah. Any thoughts on Love, Thundery Boy? I'm trying to think if I have anything else I wanted to say, really. I really don't hate it. That's the biggest thing. If I had a lot of problems with like, it's coming from a place of love and wanting things to be the best they can be or having, you know, whatever. That's always how it is. Like, if Josh critiques something, similar vibes. He might just trash some things, but in general, he often just wants things to be the best they can be.
I learned a long time ago, and this is a lesson that I feel like a lot of people that are critics, in quotes, on any social media platform don't seem to understand. You critique something because you love something. You want it to be better than it is, or you already love it and you're giving constructive criticism on how better it could be. If you're just yelling into a microphone that something is bad, but you're not offering any reasons or ways of making it better, then you're not critiquing. You're just hating. You're harassing. You're bullying. You're not critiquing because you love it. You just critique it because you want to hate it. And, like, that's the wrong way to do it.
You know what it's time for?
What?
That
sounds familiar.
It's time for Stronger Things.
Wow.
Season 4 of Stranger Things happened, parts 1 and 2. We've touched on this the past two episodes a bit now already. Just like random fun things or things we thought about. But.
Yes.
Wow.
There's a lot.
Nothing happened. Do you know what I mean, though?
I can understand that, yes.
As epic or powerful as this journey was to these people, nothing changed. Status quo-wise, nothing changed.
While I did love it, I do understand that. Like, a lot of it is characters that are either stuck in some place or they go someplace and it's about them getting back to a certain place. But it's also a lot of just explaining stuff and setting up for the final season.
They really should not do a time jump. They should not do it.
I really hope they don't.
Okay.
Especially with how it ends, they really
also,
shouldn't.
Also, this entire Stranger Things part will be spoilery. There's nothing to not spoil. Because it's also the fourth season or something.
Like, part one's been out for, like, a month now, and part two was only two episodes, so...
We have timestamps. There's more of this episode you can listen to. Skip ahead. Cool, they're gone. All right. I don't know where we're getting. There's so many things that happen in this episode, Josh. And this finale and stuff.
There is quite a lot.
There's a lot of nitpicks I have, too, but... it's just, like... There's so many things! I didn't take any notes for this beforehand.
Neither did I.
We're dumb.
I just, especially after the finale with the explanations and stuff, I really do need to go back and rewatch the first seasons and, like, really see the whole Vecna stuff. And because it does make things make a little bit more sense of, like, Will getting captured. Like, if that the Demogorgon wouldn't have taken him, that wouldn't have made sense. The Demogorgon would have eaten him.
We don't know the full details or anything yet. We'll see more details soon. I want to say that I am happy Jason died.
Yeah.
Melted in half.
I am still surprised the show has a PG-13 rating.
Yeah. It's been intense.
It's quite violent this season.
I wish the horror stayed throughout the whole season, not just like at the beginning.
I can understand that.
Because it kind of went away from the horror vibes pretty fast. The whole show is still a horror show. That's not quite... Like, it's still about xenophobia. It's still about Red Scare. It's still about intrinsically cultural fears. That's what horror's about. I want to say that we will miss things in this video, in this podcast. We will not say every detail that you want us to say, because there's a lot.
There is quite a lot. We will not get everything, because we forget, and we're idiots sometimes.
It's also 13 hours.
Correct.
People hate Mike irrationally. Like, it's a lot of hate for a 15-year-old character who literally was just trying to talk to his girlfriend. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, my favorite thing that I've seen recently is after Jonathan and Will have, like, that really great heart-to-heart conversation, and Jonathan, like, storms out, the look he gives Mike is just a look of murder, and I think it's hilarious.
I don't think it was even intended to be like that. I think it was just the way it was shot and the way that happened.
Oh, no, I know that's not their intention, but it's so funny just to think of it like that.
I love that people are like, why was this show not explicitly addressing his sexuality? I mean, they kind of did. They just literally... It was... He's a 14-year-old, 15-year-old kid who's still confused by himself in a time that's not all accepting. Why would he say anything? Robin hasn't even... Robin's not out and proud. She only is out to literally one person because it was a life-or-death scenario.
Yeah.
That's...
Like, there's a difference between how it happened in the 80s and how it happens now.
And I look at it still historically accurate with that, at least. Like, I appreciate they're trying to keep all the human elements as grounded in reality and in the time as they can. Even the tags on their costumes are authentic. Like, I love that detail. And I like how, I think the Will thing was pretty explicit to the audience. It was pretty clear.
Yeah, like, if you're like Mike and can't seem to read between the lines, then, like, that's just on you.
I actually think Mike's going to bring it up to him next season, specifically because of...
I feel like he has to.
I think he's gonna know. Say, like, I know you. I know what you know because I know what you know.
We'll be like, I should know what I know. If I don't know what I know, that's too confusing.
But the reason I'm saying that is because he knows for a fact Eleven did not commission that painting. Because in the first episode, the letter, Eleven wrote, he's painting something. I haven't seen it yet, but I think it's for a girl. He seems to like. I'm like, okay.
Oh right, I forgot about that.
That was to Mike. Therefore, Mike knows that painting was intended for someone he likes.
Oh, I forgot about that.
So that's why it was awkward in that card.
Okay, that makes more sense.
What would you say?
Yeah, because, like, Mike already had suspicions, like, in season 3, and, like, now his suspicions are basically confirmed.
And they've referenced... Now, like, since episode 1, they've referenced Will's sexuality the entire show.
Yeah. So now Mike is just like, how best do I go about this?
Quoting Alfred, how best to describe it? Yeah, I really, really enjoyed the handling of Will's situation. Also, Noah Schnapp did a great job.
The late, great Eddie Munson.
He's coming back.
I hope he does.
Do you know, you don't play D&D at all?
I do not.
Do you know anything about Vecna in D&D?
I do not.
Have you ever heard of Cast the Bloody Handed?
I have not.
Cool. So, Cast the Bloody Handed is Vecna's right-hand man. In the game of D&D that Eddie was hosting, he had the main villain being Vecna. Next to Vecna was Cast the Bloody Handed on the side, on his side of the board. And Cast the Bloody Handed, being Vecna's right-hand man, is important. And also, Cast the Bloody Handed in D&D ultimately betrays Vecna. Let me keep talking because... So, Cast the Bloody Handed is a character who is a vampire who was killed by bats. Eddie has a bat tattoo. And how did he die?
He got eaten by bats.
Left in the Upside Down as well.
Oh, shit.
He's going to come back as a monster on Vecna's side and then we'll betray him.
Oh, no. That's going to hurt.
They've done foreshadowing with Dungeons & Dragons a lot. It's definitely meant purposefully.
That's good. Okay. But still, his quote-unquote death, and we're putting it on quotes for now, that still hurt.
Also, Max, I don't like that 11 became Jesus at the end. And just like, I'm going to give you my life now. Live!
Well, is she really alive, though?
We don't know.
When Eleven went into her mind, she there was nothing.
There's a theory that because Vecna absorbs all the memories and personalities of everyone he's ever been with, that he has all of her mind inside him still, and they're gonna have to get it from her from his mind. It's a possibility.
I can see that.
I don't know what's gonna happen in season 5. We don't know. We're just saying things. Max Mayfield, RIP.
I love it that the first two seasons, Will just, had the worst stuff happening to him, and now for these two seasons, Max has had the worst stuff happening to her, so, who's gonna have the worst stuff happening to them in the next season?
Will. It's all gonna come back to Will.
Yeah, it's true.
People have called Will...
Will got a break for two seasons.
People have called Will a Horcrux already. That he'll be the last. He'll have to die to stop the Upside Down.
Oh, great.
I do like that I called it early on that I think season 5 is gonna be battle all of Hawkins weird Mageddon style against the Upside Down.
Yes, I want that.
I loved the number one stuff, the Henry Creel stuff. Fascinating. I love seeing
that was done very well.
Yeah, Robert Englund as Freddy Krueger himself, Michael Myers himself being here again. That was cool as Victor Creel. I have TikToks about nitpicks and other random thoughts I've had. Go to my TikTok at That Nerd in Theater to hear more of my thoughts on Stranger Things. I'm going to forget things initially, always.
I think new favorite character that was introduced, I probably would say Eddie. That man, just the guitar solo he does in the Upside Down is one of the coolest things I've ever seen in my life.
But it also makes no goddamn sense. Because
I don't care. It was cool.
All they needed to do is distract the bats. They have speakers. They put the speakers at the other house and keep playing things. Or play the...
This is not about being smart. This is about being a cool motherfucker.
Also, people saying he died for nothing is not true. He stopped the bats from going back to the house. He bought them time.
He didn't die for nothing.
No. Also, we didn't see a body. How did Brenner survive? Why was it never addressed?
We talking about Papa?
Yeah, it should have been addressed.
Oh, yeah. He really should have been addressed. He has one small scar on his face.
It makes no sense.
No.
We saw we see how the Demogorgons fight in the final episodes.
They consume everything.
And also, if you watch season 1 finale clip again of Brenner, he's dead. It pounces on him, claws out, ready to destroy him.
Yeah, there should have been an explanation. But I think the Duffer brothers were just like, we need Papa back, but we also kind of killed him. Let's just brush past he died and just not say anything, and everything will be fine.
They promised Matthew Modine he'd return as Brenner. They said that he'd come back after season 1. They promised him. As an actual character.
Why did they kill him?
They told him he's still alive after the end.
Okay, whatever, fine. It led to an interesting arc.
And season 2, they did a little tease where he came back, where the actor came back for one episode when Callie quit.
Yeah, I was fine with that.
And then season 3 didn't show up, so he said he lost hope he's going to come back. And then season 4, like, hey, come back.
I thought the way that his actual death this time, of how that was done in, like, Eleven not forgiving him, even though he asked for it, I thought it was very well done. I thought that was very...
Yeah, he's still an abusive monster.
Yeah, like, his intentions might have been good, but also, he's the worst.
Were they entirely good, though, ever? It's still a power play. Yeah, he might have at first wanted to help Henry. That might have been true. But past that point, he created a little army of demon children.
Yeah.
I like that the reason that Vecna can open portals is because he took the power from Eleven.
Yeah.
Even though it doesn't make sense because her powers came from literally him. Any powers that anyone else has should have been Henry's first.
Yeah, it's fine.
Also, I'm still upset they didn't explain how Henry actually got his powers. Ever, because one major point in the whole show was that they kept pushing home that is that everything has an explanation. Everything, even weird otherworldly stuff, is like based in science. They have patterns. They have every creature was like an animal. Like it all makes sense.
Didn't you listen to him? He said he opened his mind.
Shut up, Josh. Yeah, bring back Bob Newby. No, I'm kidding. Don't bring him back. But I want to watch him be wholesome and fun again.
With Joyce and Hopper finally getting together, don't bring back Bob. That's just gonna hurt him even more.
He's also very much dead.
Yeah, he's very dead.
Hopper should also be dead. He has infections. He has frostbitten feet. Very clearly they don't address. A lot of other health issues have come from this prison. He said he'd been eating maggot-filled sandwiches.
He is the most American man. He can survive anything.
He is the Red Guardian. This is his origin story.
The only negative health effect was that it took away his dad bod and made him rip.
Also, all the scars covering his entire body.
That is true. He was quite scarred.
Also, they were about to have sex in a church. I'm glad they didn't do that. That would have felt weird.
Especially, like, you know, with Enzo and what's his... and everyone else, like, being outside. Just, like, that would have been awkward.
What's funny is that Enzo has a name. They said his name in the season. No one remembers it.
I don't remember it.
Exactly. I don't remember it.
My mind keeps going to, like, Sergey, but I know that's not it.
That Sergey Kravenov? The Kraven the Hunter? The animal lover?
I know it's not Smirnov. I was just thinking of season 3 when he kept calling.
Also, Argyle, so much fun at the end. I loved what he was doing, man. Yeah. My dude, we need your salt.
I loved Argyle. He played that stoner character perfectly. He was a delight.
Catching him in the car with Eden was very fun. I really enjoyed those last like two or three episodes when he's like, shaved head, cool, that's awesome. Superpowered girl, awesome, no question. Being shot at, I'll be your driver. I'm chill with all of this. It's all good. I'm gonna make a headstone for the secret agent guy with our names on it, which is a bad idea.
I hope that he comes back for the final season. If he doesn't, I will be sad.
We have to talk about the very ending, Josh. All of Hawkins being ripped open.
Yeah, so at first it seems like that everything is fine. But then Max dies, completing the circle, I guess, of the clock metaphor.
The circle clock metaphor?
You know what I mean. So the cracks form all throughout Hawkins, leading right smack dab to the center of it, opening up a giant portal between here and the Upside Down.
And people still think it's Eddie.
It's just like, okay, we're far past the point of you thinking that a D&D game is making people cultists, and now it's just like, this is just ridiculous.
It's one thing to think that D&D makes people believe in Satan. But
yes,
to think
that
thinking that they are doing satanic rituals with people flying in the air, their limbs are breaking, their eyes are falling on their head, as well as a crack to hell opens up. What? I also found that the 2 days later thing kind of lazy writing, because there were a lot of questions that should have been addressed, like that the very next moment, how they get out of the Upside Down, what happened to Eddie's body, a lot of things like that, that like just shouldn't have been skipped past as much.
It would have been so ballsy of them to just end the season on the cracks opening up and cut to black and roll the credits.
That's what it should have been, I think.
I think it should have been that, too.
I think that would have been a much stronger ending. Also, if you notice that everyone At the very, very end, we walk out to look in the field looking at the cracks. They're all in their couples.
Uh-huh.
Except 11. Mike is next to Will, and Eleven's on her own.
Uh-huh.
I'm like, the gay. I love it. What else should we address? Eddie's uncle deserved better.
Yeah.
Eddie deserved better.
Eddie did deserve better.
I sobbed twice in that final episode.
I sobbed when Eddie died. I sobbed when
Max
was dying. What else?
They basically did the Spider-Man Infinity War scene again.
Yeah.
Like, I don't want to go. I don't want to go. I'm like, okay.
And then when Dustin was comforting Eddie's uncle, that also broke me.
I was really, really uncomfortable when a white 17-year-old pulled a gun on a black 15-year-old, 14-year-old, and threatened him, as well as his buddy pinning down an 11-year-old black girl on the yard, really, and threatening to break her arm. Very uncomfortable. And while I don't think either of those characters were racist characters, they were committing a racist act still with racial undertones. There's a difference.
Yeah.
Like Caleb McLaughlin said, he doesn't think the difference between Jason and Billy is that Billy was an actual racist asshole, whereas Jason was just driven and going a bit crazy and exhausted and having the wrong ideas in his head. But that does not remove the racial undertones that were happening very clearly. And also the fact that Lucas has not had a single story for himself in the whole four seasons is kind of messed up. They needed some black writers in the writers' room.
Yeah.
Like, Erica is still just the sassy black girl trope, which is all she's been so far, and that's really upsetting. Lucas, at first, was the straight man, like the skeptic, that kind of thing. And since then, he has not had, legitimately, a single solo story or a story for his own character. Mike, Dustin, and Will, and Eleven, and Nancy, and Jonathan, and Steve, and Robin have all had those kind of stories and character moments on their own. Lucas's only story at all he's been given all four seasons has been a little bit with Max in season two, but it was still tied to Max, a white woman. And then this one, trying to impress the white men. So, maybe, writers, hey Duffers, I know you're white. I'm white. Josh is white. But we're asking you, let someone in who's not white to write for a bit.
Yeah.
Josh, you agree with this?
Yeah.
Why are they only killing new characters?
We should have known that Eddie was going to die at the end of this. They did it to Bob in season 2. They did it in season 3 to Alexi. And they did it in season 4 to Eddie.
And in season 1 with Barb.
Every time they introduce an extremely likable side character, they kill them off. And I hate it.
You know what's funny? The first two seasons, Barb and Bob are B's. And now it's the M's. Max Mayfield and Eddie Munson. They just pick a letter and then roll the dice. Max Mayfield, I also think either stick to what you're going to do and actually kill them, like actually do it fully, have stake for an actual main character, or don't do it at all. I don't love that they broke her, they did that to her because of one thing. It kind of undoes how great the episode 4 stuff was to me. Why do that exact thing to still kill her?
I understand it, but this time the episode 4 was like, you know, her surviving, not having any answers, and then just being scared shitless the whole time. But this one, she was just like, I have to do this. Like, this is, she doesn't know she's going to survive this, but she would rather be the one to have to take up this burden rather than someone random that they have no idea that doesn't deserve this to happen to them. And it's also internally, she still has hatred and self-doubt about herself with how she feels towards Billy and everything. So, like, there's that part of her that feels like that she does deserve it. It's a very complex and complicated thing that she's been dealing with this entire season.
The most tragic part of season 4 to me, at least that moment to me, was that Max's biggest fear was seeing Lucas be mad at her.
Yeah.
That's what Vecna...
At first I was just like, wait, is that actually Lucas? Like, this show actually, like, got me for a second.
But I will say, Max Mayfield, why the fuck did Lucas not belt out running up the hill to you? They made a point of breaking the Walkman. Lucas has made a point episodes earlier saying that he loves Kate Bush now and he's been listening to it because it can save her. And also, the actor was on Broadway in Lion King as Simba.
Like, well, we don't know specifically, like, if it's just the song or if it has to be the specific,
right.
Like, music
I think
of
he
it.
Should have should have been tried.
Yeah.
I think that it would have been really powerful to see him start belting all his heart and soul out. Even if it didn't work, seeing the attempt there would have been really powerful. Or even just singing it to her while she's dying. It felt really weird to not have him try.
I'm happy that this went back to more of the horror routes.
Yeah, I really like this. I wish that it wasn't a full piggyback from So Far Away. Honestly, this is the first season where there's no point in any of the battling, quote-unquote, where the characters are not all together. We never got to see Joyce be a mom for 1 second, really. She never got to know what was happening with her kids. Not really.
Yeah. But I'm happy that in the final season everyone is finally back in Hawkins and we can finally get everyone back together again.
All Will wanted all of season 3 was to play D&D. Then once he left, they all joined a D&D club in high school.
But he doesn't know that, and he doesn't have to know that. So shush!
It's the saddest thing, though, right?
Oh, it's very sad.
I think Eleven should play with them.
She won't understand what's happening, but she will pretend that, like, she does.
She'll just move the pieces with her mind and pretend to win. Also, I do like that Jim Hopper and Mike were like, we're good now. A little hug.
Yeah.
The I stole your look line made me want to cry.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, when they reunited, I definitely cried.
And I was thinking at one point, why didn't she look for him with her powers? Oh, wait, she couldn't. Overall, really exciting season to have. I didn't like the weird Mormon side quest.
I'm just glad that they brought Susie back, even if it was for one scene. Oh, yeah, one episode.
All the Mormon kids.
There were so many of them.
Shooting a movie. Dad, your terror looked genuine. Looked real. Thanks, son. You ready for season 5?
Sure, it'll be like 2 years, but sure.
Oh, you know that the Duffers are making a live-action Death Note show now? Ready for our final topic, Josh? Josh, what is a super weird story?
I know nothing about comics, and so Sean yells at me saying, hey, here's a weird thing, look at the weirdness, and I'm like, oh, that certainly was weird.
Last episode, we talked about Hammer and Anvil.
Yep, I remember that.
And that was fascinating, right, Josh?
Yep.
In this episode, we're going to talk about digital justice. Batman, digital justice.
Why does that sound like a sequel to Scooby-Doo Cyber Chase?
Well.
Oh, no.
Do you want to have pictures of this one? Because I have pictures to show you.
Sure.
Okay. Let's begin. It is an actual comic book. But it was made entirely CG.
Come again?
It was made entirely CG.
So it's a motion comic.
No, it's a printed comic. But all the images were made in a computer.
I feel like I can't tell if that's more effort or less effort. Either way, it's weird effort.
In 1990, yes, of course.
Oh, no.
DC Comics published a rather unique Batman story called Digital Justice, written and designed by Pepe Moreno and dialogue from Doug Murray, with additional design work by Javier Romero. Digital Justice utilized what was at the time of its publication state-of-the-art computer graphics in lieu of traditional artwork. So, the characters and stuff look... Have you ever watched, like...
Are we talking, like, VeggieTales CG or regular cartoon CG that happened before Toy Story?
Oh, before Toy Story, cheap cartoon CG.
Oh, no.
Yeah, let's like, as an example, I'll show you a picture in the comic, okay?
Please do, I'm very curious.
Here's the cover.
It's not the worst.
There's more.
It's still weird.
As always, there's more. So, split into 4 chapters and set sometime into the next century, Digital Justice followed Sergeant James Gordon as he investigated mysterious goings-on in Gotham Megatropolis, a futuristic city filled with technology, and during the course of the story, Gordon dons a bat suit to become the city's new champion while taking on a new threat from the Joker. So it's set in the 22nd century, I think. So 21-something. James Gordon is Jim Gordon's grandson.
Okay.
A new threat from the Joker, Josh, because the Joker's back, of course.
As always, is this a Batman Beyond Return of the Joker scenario?
No, he's a computer virus, I think.
Somehow I can buy that easier than I can what they did in Batman Beyond.
But that was a cool story.
I'm not denying that.
And here's a panel. This is more along the lines of what we get, of art-wise.
Ah.
Little worse?
I retract my statement of it not looking that bad.
So yeah, if you look, I'll Google Batman Digital Justice, you'll see more of the imagery. Like, you want to see what Joker looks like?
Please.
There you go.
I highly retract my please.
How do you describe what you're looking at, Josh?
I am looking at a golf ball with some triangles.
Wait, why does he look...
Pink pop balls for eyes.
He looks like the thinking train from Sharkboy and Lava Girl. The giant floating face.
Yep. This is bad. I know that this is for the era. It's still bad.
What's behind him? The artwork, the background.
Someone ate too many mushrooms and got high.
So it's kind of like weird lava-y squiggles of color.
Yep.
So yeah, giant golf ball, like two golf ball eyes, weird panels of green. Hair isn't the right word. But green.
Yeah.
Detached giant smile. Let's go through the four main chapters in our story. Sergeant James Gordon is becoming suspicious of the technology that enhances his day-to-day life. Servo cops, robotic law enforcement drones, appear to be ignoring protocol. Ultron? Resulting in deadly consequences. Upon further investigation, Gordon discovers that the servo cops are unable to read ID cards, and as a result, they initiate deadly self-defense procedures. Jesus! It would seem that someone is orchestrating this system failure, and that someone is the Joker, a.k.a. this weird virus thing that looks like a golf ball. That's chapter one. Chapter two.
This weird virus thing that looks like a golf ball.
Chapter two. Gordon is suspended from the police force and his colleague is killed. Oh, that's a good start. Realizing his investigation is getting him into a dire situation, he looks to an old legend for assistance, the legend being Batman. That's like me now, dressing up as Blackbeard and just going fighting crime. Really weird idea, right?
Yeah.
Searching through his late grandfather's possessions, Gordon discovers an old Batman costume that was gifted to Commissioner Gordon from Bruce Wayne. What?
Why?
Putting on the costume, Sergeant Gordon takes to the streets as the Batman, the city's new savior. That's chapter two. Chapter three.
Okay.
Batman. Obviously, there's more details than this. I'm just doing the synopsis of each thing. Chapter 3, Batman gains a partner in the shape of Robin. Not in the shape. He gets a partner in the shape of Robin.
Like, it's not even a person. It's just a shape that looks like Robin.
It's also the only Asian Robin we've ever gotten.
Fascinating.
The only, like, specifically Asian Robin. Well, I guess Damian, he's half Middle East, so, yeah.
Damian's mixed.
Yes. But he also draws more attention from the servo cops. The drones are sent to his home to silence him, but he is rescued by a seemingly sentient Batcraft, a modern-age Batmobile. The Batcraft takes Batman and Robin to Wayne Manor, where the dynamic duo are welcomed by an artificial intelligence representation of the original Batman, as created by Bruce Wayne. The AI tech explains that many years ago, the Joker created a computer virus, and this is the virus that has infiltrated the systems which operate the city. So, Bruce Wayne put himself in a computer. Yep.
Sounds about right.
That feels like comic book stuff that would happen, though.
Yeah.
With the help of the Bat AI, Batman and Robin take Joker virus, as well as his accomplices, including the Mayor of Gotham. The Mayor of Gotham is Joker's accomplice? That's terrible. That feels also like Gotham City.
Yeah.
During the showdown, Batman is digitized and transported into cyberspace.
All right.
Believing it has been successful in defeating the Caped Crusader, the Joker's virus lets its guard down, allowing for the Bat AI to destroy the program. With the city free of the Joker virus, citizens of Gotham Metropolis look toward a future which is less reliant on technology. That's not going to stick.
No.
When it was conceived, digital justice was pitched as the next step in comic book design. Oh boy.
Thank goodness that it didn't happen.
A bold new direction. Indeed. to showcase what computer-generated art could do.
We've gotten that in video games. Thankfully, they did not put that on the page.
All these years on, and now, because of that computer-generated art, it is incredibly dated. Yep. Perhaps even more so than classic Batman stories. Yes, indeed. At least in the look. Content might be not as dated.
Content, it seems like what your typical story would be, but man, that artwork.
Digital Justice represents a future dreamed up by late 80s and early 90s. It has shades of RoboCop and offers up a future that science fiction films repeatedly predicted we would live in. Do you want more pictures? I have more pictures.
I always like pictures. And
this is the bat suit that Robin he got from Bruce Wayne, from Gordon, I guess.
Oh. Oh my.
It's bad, right? He looks
that's bad.
He looks like Big Daddy.
Yeah. That's unfortunate.
It really is. Also, why did Bruce give Gordon a bat suit? Oh, what's that story like? So we
Bruce
have
is just like I, Bruce is just like, here's a spare, I don't wear it anymore.
The characters in this include James Gordon / Batman, Lena Schwartz, Robert Chang / Robin, Harold Grover, Paul Kami / No Man, Sheila Romero as Gata / Catwoman, so it is a version of Catwoman in this, Maria Romero / Madam X, Luke Crater / Lawman, and Hiroshi Basho / Mob Lord, and Jackie Becker as / the Media Man. The full cover looks like this.
I mean, that's not the worst.
It's not good.
I never said it was good.
Yeah. Also, the partner that he had while fighting crime that was killed that made him want to become Batman was named Lena Schwartz. That was his cop partner. The
fascinating.
Robin, the Robert Chang, was a teenage street punk informant for the government.
Okay.
And there was a female pop music superstar named Sheila Romero who becomes Catwoman in this. While being an adversary at first, of course, became Gordon's lover and ally. All in the case of these four issues, which look not amazing, but I like that they tried something new.
Yeah, you often don't really see that happening in comics. Like, if they try something new, it's literally just, you know, like, bringing in new artists. But this is literally bringing in a different medium of sorts and putting it into a different medium.
And that's bold and creative, so I respect that a lot.
Yeah.
And the story seems fascinating. I'm fine with, like, future versions, like, Elseworlds stories or whatever. Cool.
Yeah.
So, Josh, where can people find you online?
Oh, boy. You can find me on many social medias. Instagram at j_Rudy16, Twitter at j_Rudy28, TikTok at Rudy_TheFilmNerd, and on YouTube at Josh Rudolph.
You can find me at ThatNerdTheater on TikTok and Instagram. You can find me at TheTheaterNerd on Twitter. And if you want to email in the show, you can email us at podgeekspeak@gmail.com or tweet at us with hashtag GeekspeakPod, and we will answer all of your comments, questions, and concerns. We'd love to just talk to you all about whatever. If you have a specific question about films or our opinions on literally anything on which shoe is best, we'll answer it. So, whatever you want.
I believe that slides are the best form of shoes.
They're so easy to wear.
Exactly.
I want McDonald's.
That's not a shoe.
No, but it has fries.
Ah, still not a shoe, but I agree.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hey, I'm Guy Raz, and on my show, Wisdom from the Top, I talk with CEOs and business leaders about the toughest challenges of their careers.
There's lots of ways to measure success.
Sometimes a company has to bet against itself.
We wanted to set ourselves apart by having a point of view.
Businesses really impact people's lives in pretty fundamental ways.
On Wisdom from the Top, some of the greatest business leaders of our time share their intimate stories of leadership, innovation, and transformation. stories you won't hear anywhere else. Check out Wisdom from the Top, only on Luminary. Now, back to your show.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.